And today I'm going to interview Bill Eberle, who is 92 years old. Bill has been on the Oregon Trail twice during his lifetime in an Eberle-built wagon. And I'm going to let Bill tell us a little bit about why he came to Oregon and a little bit about what life was like on the Oregon Trail. Bill, why did you come out here to Oregon?
Well, my dad is one and wanting to come first. He had 3/4 sections of land back there in Pierce County in Nebraska. And he took a notion he wanted to come to Oregon. So he sold that place, sold it and traded it together. He got $600 in cash and a team of horses for the 3/4 section of the land. And he come to Oregon. He had, they discovered gold there in Oregon. He got the gold fever like, and he first went through the Black Hills in 1876, Deadwood, South Dakota. And they discovered gold there in Oregon, so he kind of had the gold fever, and he traded his place back there and come to Oregon. But after he got out of there, he didn't prospect anything. He bought a 40 acres of a timber claim up in the mountains from Baker City, Oregon, after we got out of here to Oregon, from a fellow that he bought his right to 40 acres of timber.
How much did he pay for the 40 acres?
Well, sir, I have forgotten that. I don't know exactly, but I know he bought that 40 acres. He bought that fellow's right. And they cut wood all winter, and then that towards spring, my mother's folks kept begging him to come back, and he'd give them 40 acres back there if they'd come and run the place for him.
So that's when you came out then in what year?
That was in 1890.
You were about...
We left Nebraska in, I'd say the latter part of May, 1st of June. I don't know just exactly the date.
I was
4 years old anyway, the 12th of May, and I left at that time.
Now, tell me about what it was like on the Oregon Trail. Now, you were only 4 the first time. And do you remember much about the Oregon Trail then?
Well, as I said a little while ago, that's the first I remember there when we camped at Cheyenne.
In Wyoming.
Yeah, in Wyoming. That was the day it became a state.
Was there a lot of celebrating?
Yeah. And they've celebrated every year, I guess, since then.
Then you went back to Nebraska again, is that right?
Yeah, we left... Oregon in first part of June, I guess.
What year?
In 1891. See, we come out in 1890.
Mm-hmm. All right, then?
I do remember when we got to Granger, Wyoming, us kids all got the mountain fever. And they laid over there 2 weeks in Granger, Wyoming.
What kind of medicine did they give you?
Sagebrush tea and lime water.
Well, it must have done the job. All right. Then, Bill, did you have any wagon problems? Now, you went back to Nebraska, and then you came out again...
In 1899.
The same wagon all of this time?
Yeah,
and it held up all right?
Yeah. In all them years, Dad used it back to Nebraska.
Mm-hmm. What were some problems, like crossing the Platte River or floods? Did you have any problems like that?
Well, as I said a little while ago, we couldn't get across the North Platte River. There where the old ford was, where the old Oregon Trail went across it. We had to go 30 miles up the Platte River town we call Saratoga.
In what state?
In Wyoming. And they had a bridge across the Platte River there, and so we got across there. And then to top it off, after we headed for what they call Muddy Creek and Ball Springs, Wyoming. And there was a fellow, he was carrying mail for sheepherders down from Saratoga. And that fellow come along, he was carrying mail to them sheepherders down in there, and he told us to follow him to Barrel Springs, and Muddy Creek was just over the mountain from where we was at. So we did, and we come to a sheep herder the next day, I guess it was. We asked him, oh yeah, he said, right over the mountain there. And they got us off of the trail for 75 miles. They lied to us.
And you were off the Oregon Trail for 75 miles?
Yeah.
Oh.
So then a couple of us was camped in the bend of the Saratoga River, I guess is what they call it. We was headed for them copper mines down in New Mexico. We was off of our road, and we was camped there that night. And while about supper time, there was a couple of cowboys rode in there. They had a bunch of cattle they was taking down to this copper mine there to sell, you know, to people so they use them for meat. And they come over to our camp, and they said, good, they asked us where we was going. Dad and my uncle told them, well, we was headed for this Muddy Creek, in Barrel Springs. And they said, well, good, yet, people, you're off your trail 75 miles. See, that's about all we'd make in a day, is about 25 miles a day.
Yes.
They said, you can follow our trail where we drove the cattle in. They said, we'd gone from pretty near that country over there with these cattle. But it said, there's no road to mount anything, just cow paths, trail. But it said, I think you can make it across there. So we did. We struck out the next morning, and we went back. We finally got back to Gilles Creek, but we lost all that time we off of the road.
Bill, other than getting off of the trail for 75 miles, did you have any wagon problems?
No, not on that part of
The trip?
No, that was the second time we were coming out, see.
Oh, the second time, okay. Because I noticed when I rebuilt the wagon wheel that you gave me that those tires had been reset.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little about that?
Well, I think we had them reset again after we come back in Norfolk, Nebraska. I think we took them to the blacksmith. See, they get them hot there, and they got that big lever, you know, they can pull that tire together in that hot place. See, they have a little wheel that run around the tire, you know, to take the
circumference
of it.
Circumference.
And then they shrink it about an inch, or maybe it's 3/4 inch. Well, they can tell how much they got to shrink it. And they get that spot hot, you see, and that's where they pull it together and shrink it.
Right, so they had to be reset then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was the
That's
trail...
after we got back to Nebraska. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you came out again, how many horses did you have pulling your wagon?
Two.
Tell us a little about the wagon. How big was it? How big was the box?
Oh, as I said before, I think it's about 12 feet long, and then the regular wagon box is about 3 foot. Mm-hmm. A little lower, I don't know, just the dimensions. wagon boxes, something like that. Then they put them overjets on the outside, on each side. See, that made it a foot wider. You could lay a springs in there for a bedding, sleep on. Then we had a tent. Of course, Mom and Dad and part of the kids would sleep in the tent. The uncle and us boys, we'd sleep in the wagon.
Bill, would you tell me a little bit about Indians or Indian reservations, anything that you saw and remember on the Oregon Trail, your second trip?
Yeah, we went through the town of Blackfoot. That's where we come into the Indian reservation, the Blackfoot Indian Reservation.
What state?
In Wyoming. No, let's see. That'd be Idaho. Blackfoot Indian Reservation. Yeah, I made a mistake. Blackfoot Indian Reservation's in Idaho. And we went up the Blackfoot River to the, towards the head of it. That's where old Fort Hall is at. That's where the Indians, there was quite a few teepees. They had their teepees pitched on the bank of the Blackfoot River. And we seen several Indians going across the Indian Reservation. We went across the Indian Reservation to Sody Springs, Idaho.
Did you ever have any problems with the Indians? Were they friendly? And
Yeah, they was friendly, all we met up with.
Did you have occasion to sit and visit with any of them?
Well, as I said, that one Indian rode into the camp there, where we was camped there on the Blackfoot River, and Dad was cooking a kettle of meat, and he gave him a big piece of that beef. He went to the pot and took the lid off of the kettle and said, "Cooking meat?" And Dad said, "Yeah." And so he said, "You want a piece of meat?" Yeah, he'd take a piece of meat. He'd sit down on the ground there and eating away at his meat. Dad said, "You want a pickle?" "No, heap sour. He didn't want no pickle."
"Too sour?"
"Too sour." You ask him, "You want a piece of cheese?" "No, I'd choke him. He didn't want no cheese." Then we seen quite a few Indians. There's all horseback up at old Fort Hall. And there's, most of them had bow and arrow yet.
Not many rifles?
No, I didn't see any of the Indians that had rifles. Well, before we got to old Fort Hall, we met two or three Indians horseback. One or two of the squaws had little papooses on their back, you know.
Bill, can you tell me a little bit about what it was like crossing the Rocky Mountains?
Well, it was pretty rough going, and going up the hill, we'd have to walk. A whole bunch of us, kids, Mom, all of us get out and walk, and even my dad, he drove one wagon, and my uncle drove the other one. So we'd all have to walk. It'd be steep places, you know. And
what was the
road
like?
They'd go so far, and then they'd let the horses get a breather, and then they'd go on.
What was the road like? Was it washed out? Was it flat, straight, or what?
Well, there was places where it was smooth enough, and then there's places where it'd be washed out, where there's them bigger rocks. They wouldn't turn them over. They were still in the wagon tracks yet, see? And some places you have to jump that wagon up, putting your foot 10 inches to a foot up over them rocks.
How would you come down the other side of the hill?
Well, as I said a minute ago, when we come down the, down off of the mountain, we'd have to rough lock the wagon wheel, put the log chain on one wheel, and use the brake on the other one.
And did nobody rode coming down, is that right? Except the person?
We'd all get in the wagon.
You all got on the
ride down. Yeah. We was all played out or walking out. We have to get in the riding ride a while.
I'd like to date this tape by saying this is Saturday, February 25th, 1978. Now, Bill, do you have any particular memories you'd like to share concerning your first year in Oregon in 1891 near Baker, Oregon?
Yeah. We lived up there in the mountain. It was 9 miles, good 9 miles out of Baker, up to where we built the cabin and lived up there in the mountain. And as I said before, my dad and uncle, they'd cut quite a bit of wood. They didn't get any job when they first got out to Baker. We got there in the month of August, see, and then in the couple of months or more, it was pretty good weather before the snow would come in the fall. So they cut wood for a while there for this Pete Rattler. As I say, he wasn't a very good pay. So he'd come up there to get some more of the wood. He'd hauled out, already hauled out some of it, and he hadn't paid for it, and paid for the cutting. And he come up there, and my uncle told him he couldn't haul any more of it until he paid up. Well, he went to chawing around and said he didn't have the money, but he was up there and he wanted to take another load, and my uncle told him no, he couldn't take any more of it. So he was going to take it anyway, and my uncle, he just stepped up on the wagon tongue and reached in there and got his rifle, and boy, I stood beside him. I just looked ready to jump onto that feller too.
So did he have
Pete Rattler, he turned around and went back out, and my uncle got the rifle, and he told him by God he couldn't have no more of that wood. He paid for it, paid for the cutting.
Well, how much would you pay for cutting a cord of wood?
Hell, I think he paid around a dollar and a quarter or something like that. It wasn't too much.
A dollar and a quarter to cut a cord?
Yeah, they'd cut 2 or 3 cords a day.
And was that with an old crosscut saw, a buck saw?
Yeah.
And
they
used
one of them big, long saws, bucked it by hand. Well, what I wanted to tell you mostly is that's the first tree that I ever cut down in my life. And I still got the old hand axe that they cut it down with. I'm going to tell you what happened. My uncle, he always had a big tool chest. He kept his tools in the chest. And he'd generally lock it. He had a lock on it. But this day, him and Dad, they went to the woods to cut wood, and I didn't happen to go out there with them. And I come around just like any kid would, and I see that tool chest unlocked. Boy, that hand axe laid in the hand in, so I took that axe. He always kept his tools sharp and good. Boy, I went out there in front of the little old cabin. Mother was busy baking bread or something, and she didn't pay much attention to what I'd done, so he got that hand axe. I chopped all the way around that tree. It's about as big as a stovepipe. Just about the time Dad and Uncle come in for dinner, the tree toppled over and fell. And Uncle Jack, he took that hand axe away from me, and he said, boy, he said, you might have cut your hand or something with axes. Yeah, all sharp. I'd already cut it down.
It's too late.
Then when I was back there in 1899, we went up there one Sunday. Mother wanted to go up and see where we'd lived in 1991. So we went up there, and that little old tree laid there yet. A stump where I'd cut around like a Chinaman. Chopped it down.
Why did you settle up here in the back hills of Banks, Oregon? I noticed there's Eberly Road up there. Why did all the Eberlys settle up in there?
Well, I guess we bought that 70 acres there first.
Is that your farm?
Yeah.
How much did you pay an acre?
Well, they bought it for $2,000, 70 acres. But there's about 4 million board feet of timber on it then. So we cut down a lot of it there that didn't split very good. We made a lot of rails and we made a lot of cordwood. Then we burned wood in both stoves, the heater and the cook stove both. We had to saw a lot of wood for our own use. And that cordwood, where we sold that, where we could sell it and get about 2.5 a cord for it, that's more than we'd get out of it for logs. At that time, you couldn't get only about 35 cents a thousand for logs.
Is that right?
And 35 cents, that for a log, the wood in the log, would make for a cord of wood. So we'd made more money by cutting it in the cordwood. There's a lot of it, we burned it up. Just we cut down them trees, and it was pretty tough splitting. They had some of them, the top parts of them had big knots in them. We just roll them up in log piles and burn them. We'd clear an acre or two every year, you know, so we could raise some stuff, potatoes and turnips and stuff like that. Yeah, that was our first trip, you see, I just... Well, in the spring of the year, just before we started back in Nebraska, they got a job. They had a little old sawmill up about a mile and a half or so from where we lived there. And they had so much snow in the wintertime, he couldn't haul the lumber out, but he had quite a bit of it sawed, and he hired my uncle and dad to haul that lumber out, and I'd ride on my uncle's wagon every trip he made down to Baker with that load of lumber.
Now that was 1891.
Yeah,
when you came out in 1899, that's when you settled out in these back hills up behind
Banks? Yeah, that's when we settled up here. That's when we hired a car and loaded it with all of our stuff, furniture, household furniture, and wagons and buggies. We had two wagons. That's when we shipped the old wagon back too. But we bought a new wagon in Norfolk, Nebraska when we loaded our car.
A car?
Yeah.
An automobile?
No, a regular freight car.
Oh, freight car.
Railroad.
Oh.
No, they come by rail. There wasn't no cars to mount anything in.
Well, I didn't think so. Well, Bill, you came to Oregon 3 times then.
Yeah.
Well, the third time, then you came out on a railroad freight car.
Yeah.
With the wagons. The wagons were in on the freight car?
Yeah, we loved the wagons. We loaded the wagons, the buggies, and we had that Oregon. All the household dishes and sewing machine and stuff like that. We put that in one end of the car. It was a good big car. Mm-hmm. Then we had 4 head of horses and a cow we put in the other end of the car. Then in the doorway, we had a crate of chickens and our dog. We put the dog crate. Yeah, and there was just room enough for Dad and I. We made our bed down on the floor of the car.
And you slept right in the car?
We had some hay and stuff under the bedding.
And you just stayed right with all of the family possessions?
Yeah.
All the way out. It took how long?
We was on the road 10 days and a half.
How much did it cost to rent a freight car?
Something over $100. I forget just what, but it was over $100 they paid for the car.
It was a lot faster than going the other way, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It took us 3 months to come with a team wagon. Yeah, I didn't put that in when, well, you never asked me.
3 months.
He's talking about the coming over the mountain.
It took 3 hard months, right?
Yeah. Quiet. We'd lay over and come to a good campground and plenty of water. We'd lay over and mother'd give us kids all a bath, wash our clothing, and it gives the horses a good rest too, you know. And get them full of grass and stuff.
What kind of fun would you have, Bill? Any kind of games that were favorite games for kids to play on the Oregon Trail?
Well, there was nothing for us kids, so we'd get out in the road, and I was always a great fellow. I always wanted to be a railroad man, and I'd get out there and go through the motions, you know, like an engine, and chuckle. Long as the other kids would hang on to me, there would be a freight train. that's about all the games we'd play. And, well, I guess maybe the folks would play some cards once in a while. But that's it. And Uncle, he's a great fellow to read. He'd generally have some books and papers to read.
Did anybody play any musical instruments or sing?
No. No, it is. Well, my dad, he used to sing a song once in a while, a song by the name of Long Barney. You ever hear the story of this?
No, I'd like to hear
the story of Long Barney. You know, I don't know it anymore. I've forgotten it all. But he'd sing that song to us kids once in a while and tell us about his trip to the Black Hills.
When he was
and
looking
that
for gold.
That is a bad summer, you know. The Indians, that is the time of summer that Indians massacred Custer.
That must have been, what, 1876?
1876. Wild Bill and Samantha Jane, Klamathy Jane, rode into their camp. This freight train went through the Black Hills. There was camp there, what they call Rapid City. Now, that's quite a town there now, but at that time, when they went through there with the freight train, there's nothing there, only just a stage depot. See, they run a stage from Sioux City out to the Black Hills. They left Sioux City there and they went over across the Missouri River in Nebraska. Then they crossed the Niobrara River over into South Dakota and went into the Black Hills.
Was your dad near the Black Hills when Custer was massacred?
They was camped at Rapid City when Wild Bill and Klamathy Jane rode in, and they're the ones that told them about Custer's massacre.
And then shortly after that,
he said pretty near every day after they got over into South Dakota, they'd see a little bunch of Indians way off someplace on the higher bluffs. See, they followed the Niobrara River pretty much till they got into the Badlands of South Dakota. You go across the Badlands into the Black Hills there.
And then shortly after that, there was the Battle of Wounded Knee. Was he near?
Yeah, that was... No, he wasn't in there at that time. He put in... Oh, 3 or 4 years. I've been there. South and North Dakota. He was in North Dakota a while. He worked on the Northern Pacific Railroad in 1879. And then in the fall of the year, when they got the bad cold weather, they quit working on the railroad. Well, he moved the engineers out into Montana. Then he went back home in to Sioux City, Iowa.
Thanks, Bill. This is Dennis Everly concluding this interview with Bill Everly, an Oregon pioneer. Who came along in the wagon? Who were all the relatives?
Well, my mother and...
What was her name?
Hattie Bell. Hattie Bell Eberly. Hattie Bell Dale in Eberly.
And your dad's name?
Jacob Franklin.
And how many children?
Well, there was four of us the first trip. There was, I'm the oldest one, Bill, Lottie, that's my oldest sister, and then John, and then Bess, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth was Bessie?
Yeah.
And she must have been about 1 year old, wasn't she?
No, she was born in January, the 13th of January, and we left Nebraska the last of May.
So she was just little.
Yeah, she was a baby.
Okay.
And my uncle, he drove the other wagon, Uncle Ted.
And who was in that wagon?
That's just him.
He just, okay.
Well, Lord, by the name of Fred Terry come with us as far as Granger, Wyoming.
Now, Jack and Jacob and Thomas Eberly were all brothers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what was their dad's name? That would be your grandfather.
Lewis.
Lewis?
Yeah.
Lewis Eberly. Okay, now was he the one from Germany?
No.
No?
No, his dad was the one that was from Germany.
So that'd be back about 18, what?
That'd be 1793.
And what was his dad's name?
John.
John Eberly came from Germany in 1793. Yeah. And then his
he
son,
had two boys. One was this Lewis. That's my granddad.
Yes.
The other boy, I don't know whether he was ever married, but his name was Jacob.
Okay. Let's see, then where did they enter the country? What eastern state?
Maryland.
Okay.
That's where my granddad, he lived in Maryland for a while, and then he finally moved over into West Virginia. And that's where the most of the kids was born, is Uncle Jack and my dad and Lucy and Adeline Brown and Davetta Brown. See, the Brown boys, they married sisters.
Oh, I see.
Sam Brown, he married Rebecca, and Bill Brown, he married Adeline Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. Now, how many children were there in your dad's? Well, let's see, how do I want to ask this? How many brothers and sisters did your dad have?
Well, let's see, there was one died in when he was a baby. There was Tom, Bob, and Jack, or John, and Frank. That's my dad. And Henry, he died when he was little. Well, and there was four girls. See, there was Aunt Jane, she was the oldest one. Rebecca, she's the one that married Sam Brown, and then Adeline Elizabeth, she married Bill Brown, and Lucy, I don't know what her middle name was. She married a fellow by the name of French. That's my granddad, he married a girl by the name of Marianne. Hammond. She was an English lady.
And do you remember approximately what date that was?
No, I've got it in my trunk up there, though. I've got my granddad, I do remember his. He was born in 1813.
Mm-hmm. Bill, you've kept all the family history from the time the old Germans came from Germany in the Eberly Bible. Who has that Bible?
Well, Stella Pratt did have it, and I think
If I ain't mistaken, I think that the last one of the girls, she just died last October. I think she has the old family. And maybe one of Stell's girls, I don't know.
You don't have it anymore.
But I can find out, I can ask, I can write to my girl back in Ponca City, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'd like to see it. Maybe take a trip
she
there.
She probably would know because she lives in the same town that Eva Lou's man lives back there. See, that's where the Pratts, they all live there in Ponca City. They're all dead now.
I remember a lady named Eva Lou, and she had an Indian husband named Kermit.
Yeah.
Is that the same one? I was
she
just a little kid.
She used to be with your grandmother.
Yes.
Her and your grandmother were great chums.
Yes, I was just a little kid.
She worked with your grandmother in the berry fields up here.
And my grandmother said one time that she had married an Indian. When I saw him, I asked him where his feathers were. I was only about, I don't know, 3 or 4. She used to tease me about that. Valerie asked me to ask you where some of the family is buried. Like, if we were to take a trip to Nebraska, where would we go to find some of these markers?
Some of the people that's buried in?
Yes.
Well, Norfolk, Nebraska, my grandfather's buried there, and Uncle Tom is buried in cemetery there in Norfolk, Nebraska. And
grandfather's dad.
Huh?
Isn't that my grandfather's dad?
Oh, your grandfather. Yeah.
That'd be
Thomas.
His dad, Thomas, yes.
Yeah, he's buried there in Norfolk, Nebraska.
Okay.
Bill, why did the original Eberleys leave Maryland?
Just my grandfather was the one that emigrated in out of Maryland into West Virginia. And then from West Virginia, he went out into Iowa.
Why did they leave West Virginia?
Well, on account of slavery. My grandfather, he didn't believe in slavery, and there was getting to be some slaveholders in West Virginia, and they wanted to pull away from the United States and go with the South, West Virginia.
About what dates would that have been, 1850s?
Well, he emigrated, he left West Virginia in 56.
And then where did they go?
Well, they went from West Virginia and over into Iowa. And he lived there in Iowa for several years. He was a wagon maker by trade. They had a little farm. They rented a little farm there in the Iowa. He had a shop there on the farm, and he worked at the wagon buggy business, and he wasn't busy with his farming. And that's where the boys, the family grew up, mostly in Iowa. He got a chance to go with that freight train through the Black Hills. They discovered gold in the Black Hills. And the first trip he made through there was camped at Rapid City. And Wild Bill and Samantha Jane, Klamathy Jane, rode into their camp and told them about Custer's Massacre. That was in June sometime in 1876. Yeah. But they unloaded and they went right back and got another load and made the second trip to the Black Hills, and that's when they discovered quite a bit of gold there, and my dad did give him the gold fever, and so him and another old fellow, they staked out a claim and mined a while. It didn't pay off, so he worked around Bismarck, North Dakota there for 3 or 4 years. And that Northern Pacific was built near railroads through that part of the country then. In the spring of
1879.
And then he come back to Sioux City, Iowa, and just stayed around there a while, a few years. Then he come out into Nebraska, and that's when they opened up that land in Nebraska for homesteading. So he took up a homestead there in Nebraska, and he also gave him a right to take a 160 acres of timber claim, 160 acres of preemption. And he got all three quarters all right together, and so he lived on the homestead. He got it proved up, and in 1885, that's when him and my mother got married. And they lived on the homestead there till in 1890. That's when he sold the homestead, and he got the gold fever again in Oregon. And he come to Oregon in 1890. Discovered gold up at Sumter and the Baisley Elkhorn Mine. That's about 5 or 6 miles out of Baker, west of Baker.
Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. Then we went back to Nebraska, and his dad rented a farm back there, and he farmed till 1888. We moved into Norfolk, Nebraska during the winter, and then he got anxious to come to Oregon again, so the spring of 1899, when we come back to Baker again. And he got a job working with that outfit at big mill there in Baker, Eccles Company. And he worked on the railroad. He was a section hand on the railroad for toward spring, I don't know, it was 6 or 8 months. Then they put him on the fire in one of them little engines. He fired a few trips on them engines, and he went out to get a little hay. We had to keep a team of horses there in Baker, and he went out to get some hay for the horses, and coming home, he'd bought a new horse, and he had it hitched in with the other horse, and she was one of them local horses. She took one of them local spells and started to run, and they run away, and he was sitting on the front end of the wagon on top of that hay driving, and he pulled him back on the lines where he was trying to stop him. That loose hay kind of slid out from under him. He went down the straddle of the wagon tongue, and that local horse kicked him the side of the head and cut off a little portion of his ear and rolled him up under the wagon and put in a brokey back, and boy, he was laid up for the 2 or 3 months. He couldn't do nothing.
That was your dad.
So then that's when we decided to go back to Nebraska again. Well, mother's dad wanted us to come back and said he'd give them some of the farm back there if they'd come back. And Dad, he never get along with the English very well. And Grandpa Dale, he was a full-blooded Englishman. I didn't know him and Dad, they had a little bit of trouble. So Dad, he's already dug the basement for the house he's going to build. So he got his stuff all together, what little we had, and we moved back down to Norfolk again. Then he went out south to Norfolk there, out to what little village out there by the name of Warnerville. Then they rented the place out there, and that's where he farmed till in 1888. And that's when we moved back to Norfolk. And then in the spring of 1899, we come to Oregon again. And then in 1905, that's when we emigrated, come on the railroad, that shipped everything we had, horses, cows, all our farm machinery and household goods. We come clear down through Oregon here to Washington County. We've been here ever since.
Bill, I wanted to ask you, you'd mentioned earlier on the tape that you'd worked in the hops. Had you ever picked hops down at Independence?
Yeah, Dad picked hops down there one fall, let's see, I think it was in the fall of 1926.
Were there a lot of people there helping with the harvest?
Well, yeah, they picked for the Horse Brothers. Nub, your uncle, and Peggy, they was down there with them. They camped down there for a month, picking hops down there. Yeah.
That old ranch, the Horst Ranch in Independence, is now the Greenville Farms. Bill, from about the 1930s on, what kind of work have you been doing?
From 30 on, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, trying to grub the little land and around in the 30s. Then worked in the sawmill some and worked. I was a substitute mill carrier for quite some years. Started then in the first time I was substitute mail carrier was in 1918. It was all dirt roads at that time, and had to go with a horse and buggy, and sometimes I'd get home and be way after dark, and I'd have to wash the horse's legs off, keep him from getting the mud fever. So I quit the job, and I told him I couldn't. There wasn't enough money in it anyway. And so then he couldn't get any substitute to stay with him, and so he come back in 1926, and they'd graveled quite a bit of the main roads, so there wasn't all dirt roads, but I made two or three trips for the horses, and then I thought the roads looked pretty good, so I had my old Model T at that time. I bought the car in 21, so I decided to use the car from there on. So I made it all right. I got stuck once or twice.
How much did you pay for a Model T in 1921?
$700, brand new one.
Thanks again, Bill, for this interview. I'd like to add that Bill recently sold his farm and is presently living in Banks, Oregon. He is 92 years old. Today's date is February 25, 1978.